Tonight we have special guest Sam Johnson from across the pond as he talks about his mini-series Geek Girl, Voodoo Hit Girl, and The Almighties. Detailed plot spoilers, salty language, listener discretion is advised. We have one of the most interesting 100-quarter hauls today with Mr. Sam Johnson. Three of the comic books I have got my hands on have been Geek Girls. I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. Cappuccini. Cappuccini, okay. I love that title, and I love that cover with Geek Girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, is this based on anybody you knew?
No, it's actually the other way around. There is, like, a Geek Girl model. Who's my friend Amy. She likes to cosplay, but she just made a costume of her own bat without... I didn't even realise she was doing it, so it's kind of life-imitating art, really.
Now, I do love how this character, of course, came to be, that you have someone who came across these tech glasses. She's a superhero, but now she also has something called super klutziness.
Yeah, well, it's basically Ruby Kay is Geek Girl. She's a kind of an it girl at college. She gets whatever she wants. She overhears that this brainiac college geek has invented these super tech glasses. On a whim, she decides she wants them. What she wants, she gets. So she gets these. They give her superpowers, super strength, and super flight. But there's a glitch in the programming in them, which affects her brain, and the initial thing of that is it makes her super klutzy as well. So the glasses are affecting her in ways she's not aware of, as well as giving her superpowers.
Now, this, of course, what you gave me was the preview edition, which is only a few panels long. When is an official book coming out for Geek Girl?
At the moment, all we can say is 2016. We've just about completed the interior artwork, which is the biggest thing. It's a four-issue miniseries. First three are coloured. So it's coming on well. But from here, there's a lot of who the publisher's going to be, getting it through Diamond and so forth. So can't give a release date yet, just that it's 2016. There's a Geek Girl group on Facebook, and if anyone is interested in the book, if they search that, there's all kinds of previews and updates happening regularly there.
Have there been any conventions so far where you are that you've been previewing and touring these books?
Because I'm in England, so I've only been doing England so far. Because there's a Geek Girl Zero that's already out. That's on its third printing. You can also get it digitally. So I've been doing the conventions with Geek Girl Zero, variants of it, some of them with the Geek Girl model on. So yeah, been doing that for a while working on the mini-series, and I hope to do some US cons with the mini.
I, of course, was able to find you out of coincidence and luck on Facebook. And before we get into that, I do want to just go over some of the characters for this book real quick. One of the more interesting ones, Mr. Mashup.
Yeah, well, Mr. Mashup, there are similar traits in, like, a mystique. You can sort of look like anyone he wants, but he doesn't actually do that. He's this freaky, he's like the bastard love child of a demon. And he has this vessel inside him that he can sort of tap into people's brains and transform this vessel into like a clone of them, and then he can transfer his consciousness into this. So he sort of sheds his skin, this vessel crawls out. So to all intents and purposes, as far as the other person's concerned, they think this is the people he tends to go for is whoever they most hate.
So he's pretty much the villain for this piece then.
Big Bad is Lightning Storm. I mean, in the preview, basically, it takes place in Maine. That's where Ruby lives. There's two existing superheroes there, one of which is called Neon Girl, who's the big superheroine of Maine, and right off the bat, this lightning storm appears from nowhere and takes her down, and that puts Luke Geekgirl in the position of having to sort of step up. Before this, you know, she's got these glasses, she's fallen into the situation, and she's now put in this position where the top superheroine has been taken off the table, and it's up to Geekgirl to do something about lightning storm, whether she wants to or not.
Maine, out of all places. Just out of curiosity, friends there, or...?
No, not... I mean, I think, more than anything, it's New York's overpopulated with superheroes, as we know, so you try and look for somewhere.
Quite okay with the main thing. It kind of brings an homage to, for me, at least in my mind, Stephen King, since all of his books are, you know, they're all regulated in Maine, and he does make a good point of logic. You don't want to do... Especially if you're trying to break it out of the woodwork, you're not wanting to do where everybody else has a superhero, because then, you know, it just gets overcrowded and overpopulated. It's kind of cool to break it out into a different area.
Yeah, I think as well having it in a sort of not as vast an area as New York, it puts more of the onus on Geekgirl. There are only three her. There are only two superheroes that exist in this area. So it wouldn't have the same impact on her if she were living in a place like Metropolis or Manhattan. She wouldn't be forced into the position that she's forced into. Yeah, Carlos Granda is the artist for the miniseries, and he's absolutely the perfect fit for it. It's been like Geekgirl Zero actually came out some time ago. As I say, it's gone through various printings. It took a long time to get the right artist for the book, and he is ideal. I mean, his artwork is gorgeous, and a big sort of widescreen feel when it's the superhero action, and he's also very good at like facial expressions. The characters really come to life. Very happy with him as the artist.
Yes,
I like his use of the wide lines. I mean, you don't see that as often. It's kind of become more about tight-knit detail and uber detail or hyper detail in the story, and he's got a great way of portraying the scene, especially, I'm not sure what page we're on, but it's where we've got the lightning attacking our heroine, or one of the heroines. I mean, there's beautiful use of big, bold lines while still conveying a message. I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, no, as I say, I couldn't have done better with the artist, and as I say, it's a long time to find the right one, so I'm extremely happy with how it's turned out.
I do know that Stan Lee has, in interviews, quoted something that I'll never forget, that he was at a point where he trusted his artists with his life, that he didn't even have to worry about what he was going to write. He would just have the artists put what they did, and he was able to write what he wanted to with the characters on the page. The artwork was that good. He never had to worry about writer's block. I have to ask you the same question. When it comes to making these comics, what goes into it first? Is it the script that goes in? Is it discussing the character design, then creating the characters, putting on the page, then looking at the blank bubbles, and then going, bam, okay, I know what I'm going to put in?
Well, the character came first. Some time ago, Image ran a Who Wants to Create a Superheroine contest, and I created three characters for that, one of which was Geekgirl, but in a sort of rawer form. So that was developed, and her look was established before Carlos came on board. So the character was the thing. And also with the miniseries, I've got a very specific story I want to tell that's very much a character arc, that you've got this girl who starts out as this cool kid living a somewhat superficial existence. Having these powers, the effect they have on her kind of alienates her for the most part from that. So there's a development to this character and in taking her in a direction that is hopefully more worthy or more fulfilling and worthwhile for her. So it's always been about the character. In terms of the kind of writing style, the style you're talking about with Stan Lee is the old Marvel style, which not many people use anymore. So the script comes first, but there are, as I say, Carlos with facial expressions and physical expressions of the characters, so there's a lot more comes from it than I have the art than what I have nailed down in the script. But in terms of the plot, that's there. I mean, I've got, there are beats I wanted to hit, there's a direction I wanted to go in, so it wouldn't have been the story I wanted. I'd just a sort of page outline, and then the artist drew it, and then I filled in the dialogue. That wouldn't have been the story I wanted to tell.
Well, I have to say, this book, even for the few pages that it has some great panels and visuals. I think the one that we can all agree on, the one that stands out definitely, is the character getting hit by the lightning and just Geek Girl going, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. I mean, up close, that is breathtaking. Probably one of the best visuals I've seen in a very long time for an indie comic, especially pupils of dilated hairs back trapped in that lightning field. It is amazing. A small panel with the black outline with the character on the ground, street broken, is just very smart the way it was done. Just like one rectangle on the upper left-hand side, and then the final one on the lower right-hand side. Of course, then we have the other panel where Geek Girl's asking whether I should or not go after her, but the way it's all condensed in was amazing. The
colorists also are great. We've got Stefan Lemonnier, Blue Zhao are the colorists on it, and it's very like lightning storm, the big bad. Her veins light up when she's using her powers, so she's firing these blasts of lightning, and visually it's very good in it. Another thing as well, having just been working on the final issue with Carlos, is the when you've got these two fighting, you can really feel it, not just in terms of her power, but when Geek Girl's hitting her, and Geek Girl is new to this game, so she's really fighting for her life, and that comes across in the panel.
What would be her kryptonite?
Well, someone taking her glasses off. That's it, because if she hasn't got those glasses, she's screwed. So that is it. That is the week, which is something I'm currently developing an ongoing series. That's something that's factoring into that.
Now we go on to the next one, which Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman. I love the cover for this one.
I mean, these comics, they're out in free digital preview comics. So it's Carbuccini Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman. Chini is spelled C-I-N-I. Get these at issue ISSW. You can get them at Drive Through Comics. Carbuccini, it's a different feel to Geek Girl. It's a lot darker. She's an ex-junkie, an ex-hooker who was in a very bad place, in a position where her life was on the line at the hands of then-boyfriend slash pimp. The way she found to break out the horrible place she was in was she kind of got into voodoo, bastardized it and made her own sort of form of it. She found she liked this. There's a pivotal moment with her and her ex where she's forced to use this in order to survive. She goes and joys and the power it gives her, and that is a turning point in her life, which leads her down the path of becoming this kind of supernatural hit, using her powers not only to as weapons, but also she can access this dimension called the Infinity that acts as a kind of shortcut between wherever she is and wherever she wants to go in terms of her job. But it's this dimension that's described as Limbo's crazy cousin, locked in the attic. So it's a twisted place, so in order to utilize this and go through it, she has to fight her way through all kinds of horrors that are both physical and psychological, because the ruler of the place, the Rook, doesn't want her using it, abusing it the way that she is.
In regards to voodoo, because I don't think there are many that have used voodoo in the mainstream comics, as far as I know, or at least it's been very minor. Did you do any research in regards to voodoo rituals?
I did some research, but it's kind of it, because as I say, she uses a bastardized version of it. So whereas she starts out, there's like her initial thing is your typical voodoo doll. She's kind of mixed and matched it with other magics, and it's actually, she's not aware of that there's kind of a price to pay for this. But so yes, there is research gone into the voodoo side of it, but it's voodoo is kind of her springboard into other areas that she then combines with that.
So there wouldn't be any tongue-in-cheek humor down the road with this. This one would be a straight serious.
No, there's humor. I mean, her arch nemesis is Whiteout, who's this ultra Nazi type, but he's also extremely eccentric. He's very thinks he's kind of sophisticated at the same time as being this sort of cold-blooded murderer. Where she lives in Detroit, she shares with her sort of would-be lover. His roommate is quite a comedic character as well, and she has a dark, edgy sense of humour. So no, it's certainly, you know, it's not relentlessly dark. There is plenty of humour in there.
They're not team-ups at all?
Not demonic. I wanted with this to kind of go to new places in terms of villains. So there are traditional things in there, like werewolves and zombies, but they're used differently. For example, she has a werewolf for a pet. The zombies thing is kind of, it's to do with this family having been zombified, so it's like this zombie family. So yeah, in the miniseries, which is also like Geek Girl, is in the works for release next year. So the Infinity Dimension is this bizarre place with all kinds of freaky stuff going on in it. So, and Whiteout as well is this, you know, this neo-Nazi. So but I didn't want to too much. I mean, again, like with Cabra's voodoo magic, it's her own thing. And I wanted villains of the story to be a part of that, so that we're kind of getting into new areas rather than in a sort of a pre-existing genre.
I do love the coloring, especially towards the end with the red and black. I do love the atmosphere in this case, especially with the shadowing.
Yeah, well, that's in the Infinity Dimension, which again, it's, you know, it's this sort of cracked rock landscape with this sort of red sky. So again, we wanted that to have its own feel.
It's definitely much different, Geek Girl, and it feels like something out of the 70s at times. Especially with the shadowing.
Yeah, well, there's a somewhat pulpy feel to it. What you're talking about is in the preview. Various artists worked on it. The main artist, Artie Ricci, there's some artwork from him in that, but the story you get, the setup story, which is set in Infinity, Bruno Letizia, who is a smaller part of the book. So there's a consistent feel to the artwork, but we use different styles as well. Picking some of it is set in the real world, obviously, and some's in this Infinity. So it kind of facilitates having different styles being used. So there's also a place that Cabra has a kind of like mindscape that she can go into her own head, and there's also another artist used when we go there, because that has a more sort of dreamlike feel to it.
Now, more of a comment. I mean, we're kind of scrolling through as we go through. I mean, we've checked these out previously, but it's kind of fun to have them crushed in the head, and we're looking at them, and some of them adore some of the panel layouts. I adore that they're, I hate to have an analogy for anything this year because it is rather original in itself, but I love one of the pages, instead of having the typical panel work layout, it's got it set in skulls instead. It's absolutely beautiful the way that they do it. It reminds me a lot of the Old Lady Death in Purgatory, where they would change it up and have to see just how dark that atmosphere is supposed to be. It's a great hit to the reader to say, hey, this is it, and the idea that you have different artists doing different landscapes on it to prove and push your point even further when you're in reality and in her mind. I mean, that's absolutely genius. I mean, it really relays the idea that you were going for, and you can tell when you look at the artwork.
Yeah, thank you. The skulls thing is like, basically, if ever there's a flashback to Carver's past, that comes up surrounded by skulls, which again, it's an illustration of the voodoo, but also of the darkness she's come from.
And that's absolutely relayed beautifully. I mean, it's not something that you see kind of thrown into the reader. And I hate to bring this up because we've talked about it in earlier interviews, but where you have everybody knows Spider-Man's past, everybody knows Batman's past, everybody knows Superman. It's a nice way to be like, here is hers, without shoving it down a reader's throat. It's a really nice way to be like, hey, this is it.
It also kind of complex character, so it's not as simple as she gets bitten by a radioactive voodoo doll. There are various layers to her, so you flashback bring out different things throughout. For example, that like she had a baby that she had to give up because of lifestyle back when she was what she was. So you get to see Cabra on the surface is a badass and not necessarily a very sympathetic character, but through these flashbacks we can see kind of why she became the way she is and perhaps empathize a little more with her.
Right, that's a great way to establish character depth. I absolutely adore the idea of getting to see why a character became that way, and that even though reason that they're made that way, even if they are shown as a heartless being on the surface when you are introduced to them. There's a reason why they're that way, and getting to learn that and see that, it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I mean, she's as hard as she is, because basically she's had to make herself that way in order to survive. So there is emotion below the surface, but it has not kind of paid her in life to make herself vulnerable. And one of the challenges she has in the miniseries is this guy Jeff, who's her kind of friend that she just has sex with. He wants to get closer to her. She's not averse to this idea, but it means making herself vulnerable and letting someone else in.
I think that's told well, though, dialogue-less panels after the cover art sections. Think about the dream sequence. Because it looks like there was a dream sequence where she's in a meadow petting a goat, and then all of a sudden it turns into this demon goat. Is that her having a nightmare, or is that just her analyzing where she thinks she's safe with the character, and then he's going to change for the worse?
The thing you're talking about is, it's like Dark New Year is the free preview comic. The front of it has like a fully realized kind of leading story, as I've mentioned, and then the second part of it has preview artwork. The thing you're talking about is where she's in a situation with Jeff where she's sort of letting herself open up to him a bit, and the things you're talking about was, again, those are surrounded by skulls, so those are flashbacks to where she's come from. She used to be this girl. The Cabra means goat, and that's where her name comes from, because she used to be known as the Goat Girl. She, like, her only friend was like these pet goats that she lived with, because she was a strange kid. And then the demon Modisabak is kind of goat spirit. So in order, again, to build the identity that she has for herself, it's this combination of things, the spirit being a voodoo spirit.
Well, there are definitely some great panels there, and some great preview pages. I also appreciate the more realistic version of these characters with her and the werewolf.
Yeah, I mean, you put this werewolf, the werewolf comes about because this guy is causing shit in her neighborhood. She takes the unconventional approach to stopping this by basically making this werewolf her pet. So this is a kind of a domesticated werewolf, one that still is very much a werewolf.
But I have to ask a question about the design of the werewolf, because this is the most interesting creation of a werewolf I've ever seen. Usually it's, you know, half man, half wolf, or it looks a little bit like Fang Face from the Hanna-Barbera, but this one is definitely more demonic. It's fangs with the scissors, with the ears that they're elongated, and they're a different take on werewolves than I've seen in the past.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the werewolf, the feel of this creature is that it looks kind of pain encased with it. It's changed. It's carted around like a dog on this chain by Car, but it also, that visual kind of illustrates her power, in that this is, as you say, kind of an animal with a somewhat demonic appearance that has effectively been tamed by Cabra, who has it chained up, because that's how badass she is.
She's like Michonne from Walking Dead.
Actually,
that never occurred to me, but yeah, because I don't follow Walking Dead, but yeah, there is that. Now that you say that, I can see that, yeah.
It's not a bad homage, it is one, but...
No, absolutely, that never occurred to me, but yeah, I can see that.
Then we have the Almighties. Now, I guess this would be an indie version of Justice League in a way. And we got another werewolf. No. No?
This is Avengers.
Avengers?
This is an Avengers parody.
Well, you know me, I'm more DC than Marvel. I think we've discussed that a million times at this point. I'm always going to
What had me and Ed cracking up was either the variant cover or the original cover. It's like the Alter Life spells. We lost it. That was an amazing thing to do.
Yeah, because I actually remember the old New Mutants cover that it was based off of. I really dug that. And when I saw some artwork modeled after Rob Liefeld and the parody cover for the Avengers poster, really dug that. I thought it was really cool, really neat. And I was like, I was waiting on somebody to do it. You know, nobody else apparently wanted to do it. And kudos to you for actually doing it.
Yeah, well, there's a reason behind that, beyond the style of it. The Avengers, the first, there's been two Almighties comics out. There's the one which was kind of Avengers parody. The character, the Almighties are Maxitron, who's the most Avengers-similar character. He's an arrogant hero. He's got armor, so there's obvious parallels there with Mr. Stark. And then you've got more quirky Night Fang, who's also actually a werewolf, but he's this cocky British punk rock. The Almighty's are co-created with myself and Mike Gagnon. Night Fang is Mike's character, along with Mason, who's this borderline sociopath, sort of former black ops guy. And then you've got Miss F, who's a former downtrodden housewife turned quote-unquote swinging superheroine. And then you've got Stephanos, who's just some guy that runs a kebab shop. We put them in this Avengers parody in context for issue one, and issue one is there's kind of nods to like the big comedic event of last year, such as Civil War and Fear Itself, and that's sort of self-contained issue one. We wanted to make it more them sort of moving away from the Avengers thing and it being more the Almighty fleshing them out and seeing what they're about, which we get to know them better in the issue zero. But what the cover you're on about is we're bringing in another parody element, which is Wayne Winston, who's a parody of Deadpool. So the cover that you're referring to is a parody of the New Mutants 98, which was the debut of Deadpool. So that's the reason for that cover, and it turned out great. And that's not actually come out yet. That is coming out November.
I do love the social commentary, though, of the president, where his head is in the robotic body and the...
That feels very Frank Miller, Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, it's not the Brett Balmer in it. It's not him that's in the is the cyborg. That's his kind of aid, is possibly not quite the right term. But yeah, you've got this dubious character called Joe Cyborg, who's the one that after things fall apart at the end of the Almighty's One and the Almighty's have gone their separate ways, he's looking to put them back on, bring them back and put them on his books as a kind of strike force, or sort of an off the books strike force for the White House. Joe Cyborg is this guy that somehow has the tolerance of Mr. Obama. We're not quite sure what's going on there. And also Stephanos is this guy that runs a takeout who inexplicably works for Obama. So the connection with the White House, this is all quite bizarre.
No, I mean, this one probably my favorite of the three previews, and it's because it has so many things that I look at and I'm immediately giddy and I giggle about the cover alone. But I mean, Joe Cyborg is one of my favorite characters. And it's because as soon as I saw him, I don't know if you've seen it or not, Sam, but it reminds me of the episodes of Futurama where they would have the president in the glass casing, kind of like what his helmet is. And he looks so much like the Ronald Reagan that I heard his voice when I was reading the commentary or his narration, and I would just giggle the whole time because here I am hearing Ronald Reagan from Futurama while reading Almighty.
Cool. Yeah, well, it's certainly the most comedic of the books. I mean, it's a comedy book. You mentioned Futurama. The kind of sensibility of the humor I would put it closest to is Family Guy. So it's a lot of fun to work on. It pokes a lot of fun, but it's affectionate fun at sort of superhero tropes. Yeah, it was the first time I'd done an out-and-out comedy book, and which was partly why I hooked up with Mike, because I didn't know that, having not written such a comedic book before, I figured I'd go the sort of route like they do on sitcoms of having like a team of writers. So the original intention was to have like three writers, but they worked well with myself and Mike, so we found out we didn't need any more than that. And it's the combination of characters as well, like, you know, the Avengers type setup of bringing these characters, creators together, and it works very well. They bounce off each other well, and like Night Fang is the kind of most grounded one who views it all with a raised eyebrow, whereas Miss F and Maxitron are very much gung-ho and into the superheroics and take everything at face value.
I think Night Fang is my favorite character in this book, and I do appreciate the fact that each of them get like their own separate mini story per se.
You want it's these guys are brought together and they're thrown straight into these missions, and we sort of getting to know them as we hit the ground running. But in this, when the Zero issue, which say the Wayne Winston variant comes out later this year, and Wayne Winston is someone that's, when Joe Simon viewing the dossiers with a view to bringing these guys back as a team, Wayne Winston is the kind of the backup because he's not necessarily sold on all of the members. So as Joe reviews the dossiers with Stefanos, we go into their backstories and we get to know where they came from and some understanding of what makes them tick, although Mason is kind of shrouded in mystery. We know he's done some dark things.
Yes, this happens to be, I think, one of the capture stories, the true story, not the A-teams.
Yeah, so there's a free preview digital comic of all this called The Almighty's Recharge Reloaded Redux, which you can also get at Drive-Thru Comics. Yeah, when they're reviewing these dossiers, Mason has managed to sort of smoke screen around his origins. So Joe Cyborg, not being as au fait with popular culture, is reading this, taking this word for word, until Stefanos points out that what Mason has done is just lifted the A-team's origin and sold that as his own.
Sam, I do want to thank you for taking the time out to allow us to interview you. What does the future hold for you and these series?
Well, these are all, as it stands, we've had Carbra has made appearances in an anthology. There was an anthology called FX, and she made appearances regularly in the Halloween issue. This is her graduating to her own series. Geek Girl has so far only had a zero issue, so that's her getting her big full-color widescreen series. And then the Almighty's, let's say we've got the Wayne Winston variant of issue zero coming out in November, and there should hopefully be a new number one to follow that. So, big plans for all of it. I've just started, well, not just started, but I've been developing further today ideas for a Geek Girl ongoing. So, I'm very invested in all of these. I've got plans for Carbra beyond her miniseries. Mike and I would like to do more Almighties down the line. So, yeah, building things up for them. I said a Geek Girl, for those interested in Geek Girl, the Geek Girl Facebook group is a good thing to join. There's also a Carbra one. There's also an Almighties one called Almighties Amass. So you'll get previews and news on all of these. Facebook is a big place for me. So if you look them all up on Facebook, if you have any trouble getting links to the digital comics, you'll find them in these groups. And more news coming because, as I say, the Carbra and Geek Girl miniseries are both coming next year. The Almighty's Wayne Winston thing is out in November, so it's all happening.
Great, and that's, of course, we could find you right now would be on Facebook and Twitter.
Also, I think a good thing to do, if you just Google Sam Johnson Comics, I think the first thing that comes up is my blog, and that has links to all my Twitter and Facebook and whatnot.
Well, Sam, thank you so much. We will definitely be sharing the links, of course, to your comics and sending the links to the fans on where we can find you on Twitter and Facebook. Sam, thank you again so much, and we will talk to you all next time.
Say, Jarvis, is it that time?
The house party protocol, sir?
Correct.
The Pullbag is GCRN's comic book review and discussion-based podcast. Join me, your host, TFG and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we make our way through the comics we are reading. Inside the Pullbag, you'll also find back-issue classics and origins episodes of how we got into comic reading. You can find the Pullbag every Wednesday on iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Make your great escape into comics and jump into the Pullbag today.
Jarvis. Hey.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Hey guys, HunterGalcast here. Join us for our latest discussion series. Kendra, Edward, myself, sometimes Sean and Janet, as we discuss the anime series Attack on Titan. We'll discuss every episode of Season 1, as well as the comic book series. So join us. You can find us on iTunes, Spreaker, or you can just leave us email feedback at hunnickfeedback@gmail.com as we review every last one. The Almighties and I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. Cabracini?
Cabracini.
Cabracini, okay. Well, it's Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, so we'll stick with that, too. With Geek Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Is this any way an homage to, I don't know why, Janine Melman's from Real Ghostbusters at all? Kind of the way the body type and the glasses and everything?
No, not at all. I can't say that crossed my mind in the slightest.
Right.
I guess not mention the fact too, Metropolis, Los Angeles, Gotham, New York, yeah, it would be interesting to have something in between.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Was she kind of going to got into voodoo?
Ooh.
Will there be any, like, give me a second here.
Demonology?
Yes. No, demonic, thank you. Yeah, my brain just... Kendra, had anything to plug right now?
No, we're plug-free at the moment.
That's good.
It's always good to be plug-free.
Yeah. Well, I don't think... it's never good to be plugged up, I don't think.
No.
Unless you have any, bags of WoW chips, but the less we talk about, the better.
Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?